Hello, listeners. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is Ballet Idaho Out Loud, a podcast series made just for the friends and supporters of Ballet Idaho, and really anyone that's interested in the goings-on of a ballet company. We love to discuss and share what goes on behind the scenes, but really we're here to answer your questions, so please feel free to send us an email or voicemail and let us know what you'd like to learn more about. I'm Ann Mueller, Artistic Associate for Ballet Idaho, and I'm here with Antonio Carnell, Company Artist. Antonio was an apprentice for Ballet Idaho in the 2019-2020 season, and he's been promoted to Company Artist for the 2021 season. He's at a very exciting juncture in his career and progression as an artist, and I'm thrilled to chat with him today. Hello, Antonio.
Hi, Ann. Thank you so much.
So let's start off with when and how you fell in love with ballet.
Well, I'm gonna be honest. I had no interest in ballet as a kid. My mom had got me into hip hop at the local community center, and just to kind of get me out of her hair a little bit, and that led to Ballet Idaho. And I actually went through their LTD program. So they came to my elementary school and they gave my elementary classes for a month. And then at the end of that month, they offered a scholarship to me. And that actually is what led me into Ballet Idaho. And I've been here ever since.
So LTD, that's the Learning Through Dance program for our listeners that might not be aware. So that was 1 month of classes. Was that about once a week?
Yes. Yeah, so it was once a week. I think it was on Tuesdays. So it was Tuesday morning. We'd have our morning snack and then get in line, and our teacher would walk us down the hall to the community center. And that's where we took the classes.
And you were how old?
I was in the third grade. So I was about 10.
So were you in these classes? Were you already sort of feeling like, this is pretty cool, I really like this? Or did it take until you came to Ballet Idaho to discover that it was something you were interested in pursuing?
It really took the first couple weeks for me to get into it. I definitely spent the first little bit just messing around with my friends. I vaguely remember doing lots of cartwheels and never really doing what was asked. But it did take a little while for me to get into it. But once that scholarship happened, and then once I had the opportunity to go into Ballet Idaho and actually go into a real studio, that's where things really started to flip for me.
That sounds pretty exciting to be 10 years old and given a scholarship and sort of receive that indication that you have talent and an aptitude. That must have been pretty exciting.
Definitely was.
Well, for our listeners that may not be members of Ballet Idaho's audience, to preface my next question, I should add that Antonio is African American. I'm making an assumption here. I should qualify this question for our audience that ballet classes tend to be predominantly filled with white females. So there is not typically a lot of diversity, both in terms of gender and in terms of race in ballet classes. So I'm curious to hear from Antonio what it was like to be one of the only boys, but then also being one of you African-American dancers in the academy.
Yeah. So it was so interesting when I first started the Learning Through Dance program, and it was actually transferred into like an all boys program. So there was about 15 boys the first year that I was dancing at Ballet Idaho in my class. There was about 15 boys, but a couple months in is when I started to see the drop off of the other guys. And then a few years in, I was actually the only one left. So it was really just me, the only boy, and a sea of girls, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. Definitely got up a lot of tension, which was not a terrible thing. But it's interesting to see that the differing colors, right? So we have just the, you know, your white females, and then just being the one African American in the academy was definitely interesting, and sometimes hard to be the only person in my class that looks the way I did.
Do you think that it was sort of key for you that you started off in kind of a cohort of at least other boys as you started to get used to the environment and the sort of training structure? Was that an important thing to happen to sort of keep you hooked, do you think?
I think it definitely was important. And I think it actually helped a lot to see, once I started to see my other classmates drop out, but to get to see the professional company and to see how many men were in that company, and that I didn't feel as alone as maybe I was during the time. But it definitely helped to kind of walk past Studio One and see all of the guys doing tours and big jumps and stuff in the studio with everyone else.
And did you feel, though your age was very different from those in the company, did you feel a sense of camaraderie with those guys that kind of helped you through?
I definitely did. I had this kind of beautiful relationship kind of bloom out of being in the academy, just getting to share kind of a locker room with them and just see them in the hall and stuff. They definitely all became mentors to me in a way. And then soon after, I started taking company class a couple of years later. And that was really where I started to see kind of the relationship with the other men in the company kind of just bloom. And it was more like, you know, they were my big brothers almost, as well as my mentors.
I'm really glad to hear that it was a very supportive training environment for you. That makes me really happy. So when looking at how ballet has been a part of your life, I'd like for you to talk about both ways that it has supported and inspired and bolstered you, but also the places where it has, as an African-American dancer, caused you stress or pain.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I think as a ballet dancer, I think we all have this really, really incredible confidence that comes along with being a dancer. And that confidence isn't just shown on stage or in class. That confidence follows you throughout the rest of your life. I mean, it makes its way into all parts of your life, whether it's at, you know, another job, a 9-to-5 at a restaurant or something like that. It's going to follow you everywhere. And I think that that is something that has helped me personally. I think I went through a lot as a kid and in high school and stuff, but it was helpful to have that extra confidence, that confidence boost that came along with being an artist. But also, you know, along with that, dance isn't always perfect. You know, you don't always feel great about what you're doing and you don't always feel amazing about how things are going. And you know, sometimes it's hard to see kind of that light at the end of the tunnel, especially when things are rough, rehearsal is hard, the days are long, your body hurts. So that's definitely something that you have to go through. And that's something that all dancers go through. It's motivated me to push myself even when I don't really want to some days. But I think that it's been helpful in that way as well.
I'm glad to hear that. It is a sort of necessity in the world of classical ballet that dancers learn to be analytical and self-critical so that they can understand the places where they need to improve. But it's also a thing to manage to not let that self-criticism overtake you and hold back your progress. So I'm glad to hear that that has been something that you have navigated in a really positive way. What about the places where the ballet world has maybe caused you some discomfort or some stress or pain or just not the rosy side?
Yeah. So honestly, I think something that all male dancers go through is this bullying that happens when you are in school. And when people find out that you're a dancer, ballet, I feel like, is something that is mostly associated with girls, with females. And so when, you know, your classmates find out that you're wearing tights and you're dancing around in the studio, they see it as something that's girly. So something that I went through is I was bullied every single day, elementary school, junior high, and even into high school. I was able to push through because of the confidence that that dance gave me. But it's hard sometimes to want to continue to be a ballet dancer when you're bullied every single day, right? When you go to school, that's something that was very, very difficult for me. And it's difficult for many, many other males that are, you know, going through it right now, but also have already been through it. But it was always so interesting to, you know, be able to leave school and kind of leave that negative energy and that bullying kind of at the doors at school and then go to dance. And it's a whole nother world. And you all want to be there. And you start to create this bond with the people that you see every single day. And that was something that was so helpful for me when I was in the academy, was to have my friends at dance who, you know, were going through the same thing.
Dance sort of gave you a place to really shine. And I imagine that the confidence associated with that helped you navigate the negativity that you had to deal with at school.
Definitely.
Focusing on your journey and development as an artist, what type of roles as a company member have you most enjoyed doing?
That's a really great question as well. I am super into contemporary. That's kind of my jam. That's what I really, really love. But to get to have that equal balance of, you know, classical ballet and the contemporary works as well has been such an amazing experience. But for me, contemporary feels the most comfortable to my body and the most natural. But I do really, really love having that ballet because that's where I trained. That's how I started.
And what about doing new work versus work that has been created previously? Because of the contemporary work that Ballet Idaho does, some of it is created specifically on our dancers. and some of it isn't. Some of it was created on other companies. So how are those two different worlds for you?
Honestly, I love watching the creation of a piece being formed and casted and the costumes being made for it. I really love that environment. But I also, you know, love the restaging and getting to do something that's already been done, but kind of put your own spin on it, right? Because everyone's different, so we all move in a different way. But I personally really, really enjoy things like New Dance, where we get to see the company members create work of their own and then place it on their fellow members. And that has been something that is so interesting to kind of watch the gears shift in everybody's brain a little bit when they have to come up with their own thing. So that's something that I really love is just watching the creation of something new.
And you and I got to share that process together for New Dance this past season. And I can say as a choreographer that I really enjoyed the instincts that you bring to the choreographic process. I could present an idea and I really enjoyed the way that you embodied that idea and interpreted it. So thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah.
Anyone who's seen you dance knows that you're a very, very charismatic performer, and I would say, when appropriate, a very joyful performer. So I'd love to hear from you how being on stage makes you feel.
You know, being on stage is something that I've always loved doing. From the day I walked into a studio, I was hooked. I always wanted to be on the stage and with the lights and costume and with others and the music, and there's something so special about it to me. I've honestly always wanted to be a performer, if that makes sense. As a kid, another thing that I was super interested in, I did sports and all of those things, but I really kind of thought I was going to be a singer or a teacher or an actor, that kind of thing. But I always really, really loved being on the stage in front of people. I love getting to make people laugh. I love having somebody enjoy something that I'm doing. That's always been something I've been interested in. But being at the Morrison Center, that huge stage with all of those people, that's something that I've always, always, always loved. It makes me so excited when I get to find out that we're going back or that we're prepping the season and we're going there. We're going to Tech even is my favorite thing. But being on stage is something that is so special for me. I hope I never have to stop.
I can tell that you feel sort of alive in an extra special way when you perform, and that's really satisfying.
Yeah.
Well, turning our focus now towards recent events with the very tragic death of George Floyd and the protests and social unrest and vigorous national conversation about systemic racism. First, I'd like to know how you're doing with everything. It's a lot to take in. Tell me how you and your family are managing with everything right now.
You know, it's been a very interesting couple of weeks. When this all happened, I actually wasn't even aware that it was going on with George Floyd. I didn't even know that it had happened. I was kind of wrapped up in my own world, teaching and dancing and working. But I just happened to turn on the news one day and saw that the world was ablaze. I really didn't know that this was going on. But this is something that is hard. It's hard for me and it's hard for my family. I have two younger siblings who are also African American, and it's so interesting to see them growing up in this world and how they go about dealing with things like this. And it's also interesting to watch, you know, my family members that are not African American and see how they're dealing with it and how they're explaining it to their kids. But it's been a difficult process. All of this has been a little nerve-wracking, and it's so terrible what happened to him, and I can't imagine what his family is going through, and you have to kind of put yourself in those shoes, which is a terrifying thought, honestly, but sometimes you have to step into somebody else's shoes to kind of see through their eyes a little bit, but it's a terrible thing that happened to him, and it's so scary, and it made me nervous to even leave my house and go about my day because of the way that I look, and that's a frightening feeling.
I can't imagine. So within that, you know, we've been having a lot of conversations internally and externally and in every place in our lives. I'd love to hear from you what role you feel arts organizations or dance companies play in this conversation and what we should be doing as arts organizations to make positive change.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that arts organizations play such a special and vital role in the communities that they're in. I think that arts organizations are a lot of the time kind of the pinnacle and the leaders of a community. And when something like this happens, I think it's an interesting question that needs to be asked is how do we go about talking about this issue? How do we go about bringing it up to our community? What do we say? And I think that that is something that a lot of arts organizations have had some trouble with in the last few weeks is, you know, what do we say? When do we say something? Is enough enough? You know, so that's something that I've watched other companies struggle with is how to go about eloquently dealing with what is going on, as are other people, you know, and the members of their company who are also African American, and how they're dealing with it. Because on one hand, you want to support the people in your company. And on the other, it's you're, you know, a nonprofit, and there's many things that go into that, which can be a frustrating thought, but it is something that that has to be talked about. But I do think that arts organizations in general are so accepting. They are accepting of just about anything you can think of. They believe in equality for all and everything above that. And I think that it is so important, and I'm gonna say it again, that arts organizations are the leaders when it comes to things like this. And I think it is so important that they don't stay silent about these issues, and they use their platform and their leadership to talk about what matters and to show that they want change and to take risks.
Yeah. And I think an interesting element that plays into this struggle, this sort of internal look, is that we're not active right now as we normally are in the making of art, right? Because of the quarantine. Normally we would be creating performances, we would be creating new works. And I think that is the place where arts organizations have been most comfortable making statements. And I think because we're not in the art making process right now and we're speaking more with words, that's a whole other sort of piece to navigate.
Yeah, I love that you bring up that point, because that is something that's our job is to create movement and to create things that express how we're feeling without having to say any words. And we're put in a position right now where, you know, we can do movement and make things in our own homes, in the comfort of our homes, but we aren't able to create movement as a whole and kind of do this big group movement kind of scenario like we're used to. So it's more kind of on the hands of the individual themselves or others to speak on what matters and to show how they're feeling. But we have to use words now. And that's something that is definitely a huge change, because in dance, normally when you're, I think I can speak for all dancers when I say when you're dancing, you are dancing if you're angry. A lot of people improv and dance and do those kind of things. If you're sad, you'll dance. If you're happy, you'll dance. That's just kind of how we work as artists. But now we're in a position where now we're posting and everything's on the internet. And that's where we have to go in order to talk about what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else on this topic that you'd like to say or share with our audience?
I think something that I do want to bring up is just how real this is. And it's happening everywhere, but it is definitely happening here in Boise. And that is something that is hard to believe. I think that Boise is, I've lived here my whole life and Boise is so beautiful. I love everything about it. But when it comes to racial profiling and things of that sort, that is something that happens. It doesn't matter who you are or what you do, it's still going to happen to you. And it actually happened to me a couple weeks ago, when I was just going about my normal day. I just purchased a new car, and I was driving my new car a couple days after I got it to go get, I think I was headed to Starbucks just to go get a coffee, maybe around 10 a.m. And I noticed an officer had passed me going the opposite direction. And he actually turned his car around at the light and did a U-turn and followed me all the way to the Starbucks. And then as I turned into the Starbucks, he continued on. But it dawned on me, you know, why was he following me? And I was going through my head trying to think about all of the things that I, you know, could have done wrong. Did I speed? Was I going too fast? Did I run a light? Did I cut him off? You know, is there something that I didn't use a blinker? Did I do something wrong? And then it kind of dawned on me, well, he probably was following me because he probably doesn't think that car is mine. And that was something that I kind of just pulled into a parking spot, and I was, you know, really upset, and I was crying, because anybody that knows me knows that, first of all, I've never stolen anything in my life, and I never would. But also, I would have no reason to do anything like that. And anyone that knows me knows that I pretty much do the same thing every day. I'm headed to the studio, I'm headed to teacher, I'm going to get coffee, one of those things. So it was hard for me to kind of think about that for a second and have that officer follow me, and that feeling of almost terror for a second, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen when they pull you over. And that's just because of things that have happened to African Americans. And then it was really stunning when it happened a second time in the same week. I was followed for about an hour when I was driving to go teach one of my classes out in Meridian. And it's not like I didn't have my plates on the car or anything. I was just headed to go teach.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I feel very lucky to have you working in my midst, you know, as a coworker and as a young artist that I have the pleasure of mentoring. You bring so much to the work environment as a person and as an artist, and we are really lucky to have you.
Thanks so much, Anne. And I do want to say, you know, something that is so special about Ballet Idaho is that we create this family environment. We are a family, and Ballet Idaho is our home. And it has always been my home, and it will always be my home. And I love everyone that is in our home and in our family. And I have always felt welcomed, and I am so excited to continue this journey.
Me too. Well, I can't think of a better way to end our interview than with those beautiful words. So I'd just like to say thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We can't wait to see you back on stage.
Thank you so much, Anne. I can't wait.
Well, that's it for today. Thanks to our guest this week, and thank you to you for joining us. We're really grateful to remain connected to you as our audience and our community. Please follow and share this podcast with others, and let us know what you think. Feel free to send us an email at admin@balletidaho.org. Until next week, be well, keep moving, and stay inspired.